Welcome to the Alley Cast for October 2009. I'm Chris Boros. The music you hear behind me is indeed Tubular Bells, but from Jem Moore on Hammer Dulcimer. Of course, Tubular Bells was written by Mike Oldfield and became the theme for The Exorcist. Later in the Alley Cast, I'll be playing you a montage of songs that you can hear in our special Scream Stream, 5.5 hours of folk music themed for the Halloween season. We'll do that a little later on in the Alley Cast today. We'll also be listening to my exclusive interviews with Matty Pryor and Peter Knight of Steel Eye Span. That band is celebrating their 40th year anniversary, and they have a new record coming out later this month, and we'll be sharing those interviews with you today in the Alley Cast. We'll also listen to Folk Alley's exclusive Live from Folk Alley concert with the Acoustic Hot Tuna. We'll hear the open mic sounds of Mark Lennon, and we'll close the Alley Cast today by introducing you to a band called Comus. They made an album in 1971 called First Utterance that is possibly the most sinister and demonic all-acoustic folk album ever recorded. I spoke with the band's founding member, Roger Wooten, and we'll get an update on where Comus is today in 2009. Let's get things started on the Alley Cast today with my exclusive interview with Peter Knight. I went to the Ark in Ann Arbor, Michigan to see Steel Eye Span. They are celebrating their 40-year history. Not often does a band performing traditional material make it into the mainstream. But in the mid-1970s, Steel Eye Span had major top-of-the-pop success performing traditional English folk songs. Here's just a sample of my interview with Peter Knight. You can listen to this full interview right now on the website at folkalley.com. We are celebrating 40 years.
That's right.
Of Steel Eye Span.
40 years, microphone in one hand, beer in the other.
What is it like to, to be in a band and to have this thing going for this long?
Well, it's fantastic, isn't it? Yeah, it's, I mean, what do they say? Life is what happens while you're making plans. You know, it's, you're just there doing it. And all of a sudden it's 40 years. And I suppose the key point is that we're still doing it and we're still enjoying it. And none of us are the type of people that would do it if we weren't enjoying it. And if we didn't feel that we were still giving something to music and traditional based music. So we're still enjoying it.
Was traditional bass music a part of your family life growing up? How did you come into this world?
Oh,
you
no.
were classically trained, right?
That's right, yeah. No, my father played violin and mandolin. So I played mandolin first when I was very young, 6, 7, 8, whatever it was. Didn't really take it that seriously. Wasn't a child prodigy or anything, and just, you know, playing a bit of music. And when I was 13, I was having violin lessons at school, and my teacher put me in for an audition for a scholarship to the Royal Academy of Music, which I passed, and then I went there for 3 years. Learned good tone production, I think, you know, how to write music, different sort of areas of classical music. And then I left when I was 16. It wasn't until I was probably 18 that I heard Michael Coleman, an Irish fiddle player, and I had no idea that there was music like that around, and I just thought, that sounds pretty good to me. And I got very involved with the Irish music scene in London, which led me to play in folk clubs and join Steel Eye eventually.
What was it like during that time when, you know, Fairport Convention had released Lesion Leaf and suddenly there was this idea of electrifying the music? Before you got wrapped into that world, what did you feel about that when it happened?
Well, I didn't really feel anything. I was living in the same flat as Bob Johnson. There was Swarbrick and Carthy were playing in the folk clubs. Bob and I started playing some songs together, doing a few floor spots in folk clubs, then eventually started working in a few folk clubs. And I'd heard whispers of this band, Steel Eye Span, that were playing electric folk. At that time, I didn't know anything about Fairport or, you know, I mean, there were other bands later, I think Fotheringay and Matthew Southern Comfort, and there were lots of people that were incorporating traditional music into a rock setting to varying degrees and for various reasons. But it was new and happening at that time and did cause a ripple, and it was controversial. And the next thing I know, Martin Carthy was turning up to gigs that Bob and I were doing. And they were obviously, they had their eye on me as a possible, chap to join Steeline, which is what happened.
Do you remember the reaction in those early shows when Martin Carthy was playing with the band and playing electric guitar? Do you remember how the diehard folkies felt about it?
Oh, a lot of them hated it.
That's just a sample of my exclusive interview with Peter Knight from Steel Eye Span. If you'd like to listen to the full thing, you can do that right now on the website. Steel Eye Span have a brand new studio record coming out in late October called Cogs, Wheels, and Lovers. It's their first all-traditional album since the 1970s, so check out that when it's released. This is the Alleycast for October 2009. I'm Chris Boros. Our most recent Live from Folk Alley concert recording on the website right now is our exclusive recording with the Acoustic Hot Tuna featuring Jorma Kaukonen and Jack Cassidy. Let's listen to a little bit of that right now.
Well, let us get together right down here. Get together, children. We'll get together right down here. Let us get together, children. Head right down here. Well, let us do our living right down here. Do our living, I said. We'll do our living right down here. Let us do our living, children, right down here. Children, head right down here. Thank you. Thank you very much. Since this is a radio thing, I thought I would mention that, pushing 50 years ago now, a guy who was young then mentored me considerably. His name was Steve Mann. And Steve passed away last week.
just before they re-released some of his things. Now, the bar of guitar playing has been raised incredibly over the last 40 or 50 years. But in those days, Steve Mann was the fingerstyle guy playing Ray Charles' Drown in My Own Tears. So when his re-release stuff comes out, remember that name. We'd like to do this song for him. It's called What Are They Doing in Heaven Today? Well, what are they doing in heaven today? Sin and sorrow are all washed away. These ebb and flows like a river, they say. What are they doing there now? I'm thinking of friends who I used to know. Lived and suffered in this world below, but they've gone up to heaven, and I want to know. What are they doing there now? Well, what are they doing in heaven today? Sin and sorrow are all washed away. These ebb and flows like a river, they say. What are they doing there now? There's some whose hearts are burdened with care. Spend all their moments of fighting and fear, while they clung to the cross with trembling and prayer. What are they doing there now? Well, what are they doing in heaven today? Sin and sorrow are all washed away. These ebb and flows like a river, they say. What are they doing there now? There's some whose bodies were fields for disease. Medicines and doctors couldn't give them much ease. But they suffered until death brought them final release. What are they doing there now? Well, what are they doing in heaven today? Sin and sorrow are all washed away. These ebb and flows like a river, they say. What are they doing there now? There are those who are poor and often despised, looked up at heaven with tear-blinded eyes, while people were heedless and deaf to their cries. What are they doing there now? Well, what are they doing in heaven today? Sin and sorrow are all washed away. Peace ebb and flows like a river, they say. What are they doing there now? Well, peace it flows like a river, they say. What are they doing there now?
That's a sample of our exclusive Live from Folk Alley concert with the Acoustic Hot Tuna featuring Jorma Kaukonen and Jack Cassidy. You can listen to that full concert right now on the website at folkalley.com. It runs close to an hour. And if you're a member of Folk Alley, you can download that concert for free. If you'd like to become a member, just go to the website. All the information about membership is right there for you. I'm Chris Boros, and this is the Alleycast for October 2009. Thank you so much. The open mic section of Folk Alley is where anyone can post their songs for the world to hear. As a listener, you can also rate the songs and leave comments for all the songwriters. For this month, we're showcasing Mark Lennon. He lives in Los Angeles. His third album is out now called Down the Mountain, and he submitted a whole handful of songs to the open mic portion. He grew up on hippie music and bluegrass and originally comes from North Carolina. He's lived in Southern California for the past 7 years, combining his folk, bluegrass, classic country, and rock and roll influences. Here's a song from Mark Lennon called Wild Side. He's Folk Alley's exclusive open mic artist for October.
Well, I've got your face on my mind now. I hear your voice out loud. Singing through on my tape recorder. Blue nights that dance around my mind. What's it going to come to get you on the wild side? The wild side. Ooh, what's it going to come to get you on the wild side tonight?
Well, I got my heart can say will change me. It's something I gotta do. Well, I know, and you know.
Ooh, what's it going to come to get you on the wild side? The wild side. Ooh, what's it going to come?
Mark Lennon and Wild Side. He's Folk Alley's featured open mic artist for this month, and if you'd like to listen to more of his songs, you can find a link to his open mic page right now on the homepage at folkalley.com. I'm Chris Boros. Thank you so much for listening today. Well, it is the Halloween season, and to celebrate, Folk Alley has put up a special side stream, 5.5 hours of Halloween-themed folk music. It's called our Scream Stream, and you can listen to it right now. You can find a link to that special stream on our homepage. Let's listen to a little montage right now of some of the spooky songs that you'll hear.
When the 12-month and one day was past, the ghost began to speak. Why sittest here all on my grave, and will not let me sleep? There's one thing that I want, sweetheart, there's one thing that I crave, and that is a kiss from your lily white lips, then I'll go from your grave.
The werewolf, he comes stepping along. He doesn't even break the branches where he's been and gone. You can hear his long holler from away across the moor. That's the sound of the werewolf when he's feeling poor.
She drew a fair little off her head, all alone and alone. She bound the baby's hands and legs down by the greenwood side.
Montage of some of the songs you'll hear in Folk Alley's Scream Stream. It's a 5.5-hour side stream of Halloween-themed folk music. There are songs about ghosts and witches and even vampires, and of course, the murder ballad as well. You can find the special stream online at our website at folkalley.com. But you should be warned, one of the bands that's in the Scream Stream is called Comus, and their music's pretty weird, and we're going to sample what they're all about later on in the Alleycast today. I'll be sharing you my exclusive interview with the founding member of Comus. They made one really scary album in 1971, and you'll be hearing it in just a little bit. This is the Alleycast for October 2009. Thank you so much for being here. On the website right now, I'm also very excited about my exclusive interviews with Matty Pryor and Peter Knight of Steel Eye Span. Steel Eye Span is the reason that I got into this music. This is how I discovered folk music, was through the English folk rock sounds of Steel Eye. It was a great opportunity to sit down with Peter Knight and Matty Pryor when I saw the band play at the Arc in Ann Arbor, Michigan in September. Here is a small sample of my interview with Matty Pryor. If you'd like to listen to the full interview, you can do that right now. You can find our Steel Eye Span content in the rotator box on the homepage at folkalley.com.
Like all things in life, time is a movable feast. And it seems like yesterday in some ways, and yet it's been a long time, obviously.
What was it like back then when you were first starting out? How did you find this music? Because I understand it really wasn't part of you growing up, this traditional stuff. How did you find it?
Well, I actually was two Americans that I was driving around. I did a week in a wimpy bar working, and I earned £10. And I did a night on my own with a banjo, and I earned £8. So I thought, I'll do this for a bit. And one of the ways that I moved forward was to drive other people around. So I drove Reverend Blind Gary Davis around for a month in England, and I drove this couple around for about a year. And they were Americans who sang Sacred Harp and various other kinds of music. And they said, you really got to stop singing this American stuff because you're really bad at it. So and they had lots of tapes of English material. And so they said, I thought they were very good, so I sort of... And I said, we did it at school, you know, I don't want to do that. And they said, no, it's really good, you should do that, it'd be much better. And they gave me these tapes, and I went and read and listened to them, and I thought they were fairly boring and droned on, and these old people and all that stuff, you know. And then, but I really made an effort. And gradually I got to hear the tunes. And of course, once you can start hearing the tunes, you do have to work at music. To hear it.
So you didn't love it at first. How did that
happen?
Well,
it had been part of school, you see. And it was kind of old and stuff that wasn't really very interesting. But once I started to hear the tunes and once I started to hear what people, singers, were doing, then that changed.
As I walked out one morning in the springtime,
your early work was with Tim Hart as a duo.
Yeah.
And you made three records with him, actually.
Yeah.
Talk about that time, and I understand that you both were interested in doing songs that other people weren't doing. That was kind of your stick,
right? That's right. Well, that's what everybody did in the folk world at that point, at the beginnings of the revival, was that you tried to find a repertoire that was your own, a bit based on the same idea that everybody has, the idea being that you have a repertoire that is your own, a bit like the old music hall artists, you know, had a vicious fights if you sort of stole somebody's idea. It wasn't quite as bad as that, but very close. And so the idea was to find a repertoire that became yours, in a sense, that you made popular and known, and other people would have repertoires that you wouldn't kind of encroach on very largely. Sometimes you did, and sometimes there was ill feeling, sometimes it was no bother at all. But there was that kind of situation where you tried to find a repertoire.
Proud Margaret stood at her father's doorway, as straight as a willow wand, and by a gardener bold. with a red rose in his hand, his hand, with a red rose in his hand.
That's just a sample of my exclusive interview with Matty Pryor from Steel Eye Span. If you'd like to listen to the full interview, you can do that. It's on the website right now. Steel Eye Span has a brand new album coming out late October. It's their first all-traditional material since the 1970s, and it's called Cogs, Wheels, and Lovers. In 1971, possibly the most sinister and demonic all-acoustic folk album was unleashed to the cosmos by a band called Comus. It was a record that dared the audience to listen. With songs about mental insanity and ritual sacrifice, Comus were not your typical acoustic folk band. In fact, most people weren't quite sure how to handle the material, so the record called First Utterance vanished quickly. But 30 years later, Comus became an underground cult phenomenon, with a growing number of fans, not emerging from the folk world, but from the death metal world. In 2008, Comus reunited and has since been working on material for a possible new album. I recently spoke with the band's founding member, Roger Wooten, to get to the bottom of the strange and bizarre world of Comus. When I first discovered First Utterance, the friend who turned me on to the album told me that the band was a real cult worshiping this god called Comus. And after I listened to the album, I almost believed him until I did a little research and I discovered that that absolutely was not the truth.
No, it's not. Comus is a character from Milton, and he was the son of Bacchus, and he kind of went bad and chased young women in the forest and was generally lascivious and he was a pretty nasty character. But we gave ourselves that name because we'd started to come up with the material on First Utterance, and the manager, Chris Yule, had been studying Comus at university, and he mentioned it. He said it'd be a really suitable name for the band. So we then read Comus, and we thought, yes, that fits with the image, the kind of character which I was beginning to develop.
Now, I understand that the formation of Comus actually started years before the first album was released in the folk clubs. Is that right?
That's right, yes. Glenn Goring and myself first started playing together in 1968 and started playing in folk clubs around South London. And we went to art college together. That's how we met. And the band was formed of members from the art college and friends of members at the art college. So it was all students who knew each other, and that's how the band got together.
So when did the overall concept of the band begin? When did you have this idea of making this sort of demonic album? How did that all kind of happen?
It just kind of came about. I can't really say. I think it was somewhat drug-induced or drug-influenced. I think there was a lot of acid around, and I think that had a big effect on it. And we did a lot of hashish and stuff, and the chillins and big stuff, you know. And there was some great gear around at the time, so we used to get very stoned. I think that had a lot of influence on it. And we also grew up in the country, in the rural. And so you do drugs in a rural environment, and you kind of see these things. Plus, on top of that, we just read Lord of the Rings by Tolkien. And that had an influence. So it was all these things coming together at the same time.
For
For me, one of the most interesting aspects of the album, First Utterance, is that it's basically 100% acoustic, with the exception of electric bass and maybe a little electric guitar in there.
Yes, correct.
Was that deliberate? I mean, when you were in the studio, did you say, we have to make this acoustic?
That's how we evolved the band, and that's how we actually played on stage. I mean, the album sounds, there are very few overdubs. It's mostly how we actually sounded live. I mean, I think we were actually better live than we were in the album. That was the live sound, that was the band's sound, and that's how we evolved as an acoustic act. I think bringing in Colin Pearson, who was classically trained, and then Rob Young on flute and oboe, who was also classically trained, then had this aspect of adding that additional sort of classical aspect to it, which also kept it acoustic.
Even though it is acoustic, the album has the fury of almost heavy metal at times.
It's powerful. It's very. We've got a lot of heavy metal fans, believe it or not. It's powerful, yeah, and we've got that power back on stage now. I would say that we're better now live than we are on the album, much better.
That's interesting. So even back then, you think in the early 70s, the band was better live than what was captured on the album?
Yes.
Well, why is that? Was it being in the studio? Was kind of
A, not being used to the studio. B, the difficulty with having to work with baffles and recording as a band and getting overspill. Remember, it was only 8-track then. The studios were relatively crude. And then on top of that, we had a pop producer who didn't understand what we were doing at all. And he was a nightmare.
At that time, you know, the early 70s, there were a lot of bands singing about peace and love, and then here was Colmes with songs about mental insanity and ritual sacrifice.
Yes.
What was the reaction like when that album was released in the early 70s?
Not very good. The critics didn't like it. It was very much against the grain. We had a hardcore of fans who loved the energy, you know, and the fact that we were so different. But we didn't really ever catch on big. After the album, there was a, from the middle of 1971, there was a decline in interest.
Bright the sunlight, summer day, Colmes wakes, he starts to play, 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 play. Virgin fair, smile so sweet, Colmes' heart begins to beat, 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 beat. Rise up, Colmes, sing your song, bewitch the maiden, the day is long, cast your spell, sweet music, crown a virtuous shell.
Were you surprised at that, or were you kind of almost knowing that? Because
very disappointed. We were disappointed with the album. And it was very poorly distributed, and fans would write to us saying they couldn't find it anywhere, they couldn't buy it. And so, you know, it's like the record company, as soon as they heard it, sort of wanted to get rid, you know, just to hide it and not publicize it and not let anyone know about it. Let's let this one get, put this one under the carpet and forget about it. And that was the attitude.
I also understand the band had a hard time getting gigs, too.
That started happening around the autumn of 1971. It started to decline. As glam rock came up, it kind of eclipsed us completely. And there were other acoustic bands as well who were nicer than us. So went, had the same fate. A lot of acoustic acts started splitting up and couldn't get any gigs. And there was suddenly a complete change. When glam rock came in.
And a lot of bands didn't want Colmes to be the opening act, right?
Oh, we used to blow a lot of bands off stage, yes. A lot of quite well-known bands, after a few gigs with us, they didn't want to work with us again because we would hog the show, you know, and go down better than them.
Surprisingly enough, the band broke up, but then reformed to make a second record called To Keep From Crying.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's dismal. Yeah.
Well, it's definitely, yeah, I mean, instead of the bizarre, scary nature of the first record, now the band is singing about love and movie stars.
Yeah, well, the thing is about that is, after glam, ironically, David Bowie was our nemesis in that when he made it big and glam rock came up, we were so eclipsed. You couldn't be experimental after that. And so I had to try and find a way of going commercial, and that was what I was doing. And then the opportunity came up to make a second album with Virgin, and half the members didn't want to do it. And all I had was this material, which wasn't even intended for Comus. And so that's what we ended up doing, and we're all absolutely, we don't like the album at all.
So 30 years later, Comus in 2008 finds itself reunited yet again. How did that happen and why now?
Well, first of all, the album was re-released by Sanctuary in 2005. And there was we were offered a record deal, you know, do we want to reform? And we all said, no, too much water under the bridge far too long ago. I don't think we could do it again. And then the pressure kept coming and coming and coming. And people kept asking us to reform, and people kept getting in touch with us. And we got all this feedback off the internet that we got masses of fans all over the world, including the US, that we'd never had when we were originally together. And eventually, Mikael Eckerfeldt of Opeth, who was a big fan, was offered a festival in Stockholm, the Mellowboat Festival, and he said he'd only do it if the promoter could get Comus to reform, and they would do it. So he came over to London and offered us good money. So we said, well, all right, let's do it. A one-off for old time's sake and see what happens. And then we found rehearsing for the material so laborious, so difficult. It was taking such a long time. It was so difficult to get it back again. We thought, well, we can't do all this work just for one gig. So we ended up reforming.
And the Mellow Boat was a cruise, like a heavy metal kind of a cruise, right?
Well, it was a mix. But I agree with you. There were two or three heavy metal bands and two death metal bands. But there were other acts as well on the bill.
Do you find it interesting that the heavy metal community has embraced this band?
Well, it's not so much the heavy metal community; it's the death metal community, and there's a subtle difference. It's the howlers and the roarers and the myth culture thing. Which a lot of the heavier rock bands get into, and we are like an acoustic equivalent. We're like an acoustic version. I once described Comus as death wood.
I like that. That's great.
Which I think is rather good.
Band just played a folk festival too.
Yeah, that's right. The Mosley Folk Festival in Birmingham.
So how does the folk audience feel about this?
Well, a mix. I mean, there were a lot of our fans there, and they were fantastic. But you know that somewhere in amongst them there are these traddie folkies who don't like us. So the traditional folk fans don't like us, but those who are more modernist and like a bit of experimentation do. We had a lot of people there who loved it. We went down very well, but one was aware amongst all the thousands of people that not absolutely everybody liked it. You know, it didn't appeal to everybody. You know.
That's okay, though. I mean, if it appealed to everyone, then it really wouldn't be that interesting, would it?
Absolutely. And I mean, if you're contentious in some way, it gives you an edge. It draws attention, and it gets you talked about. I mean, it as far as I'm concerned, it's not a negative thing. It's like we're the bad boys of folk, you know. And that's not a bad image, as far as I'm concerned.
So what's next? I mean, you talked about...
Well, we're going towards an album. That's the intention.
Is there a record company interest?
Not as yet. I mean, our present manager says don't bother with a record company. But we will see what we will see. I think the first thing is to record two or three songs and get them available as MP3 downloads via the website. And then see what happens from there. The thing is that I want to get some recorded product out as soon as possible. I can't wait until we've written the whole album. And the trouble is, it's very difficult writing for Comus now, because it's like you have to go back to 1971 and move forward.
What is it like for you to be on stage and to look around and see your old bandmates from 30 years ago, and here's this thing, it's back? That must be rewarding.
There is a lot of warmth. At the moment, it's very edgy because we're not getting enough gigs. It's not taking off the way it looked as if it would. And I feel the only reason for that is because we need the right agent and manager to actually get the gigs for us. I think we can do a lot better than we are doing. And we've got some urgency on this. Obviously, you know, the age we are, we can't waste time now. We want to make the most of it. And, I mean, I'm 60. I'm fit. But the point is, it doesn't go on forever. So I haven't got years to waste or wait. It's got to start happening quickly.
Well, Roger Wooten, I really wish you all the best. And I hope it does happen quickly, because I'm itching for a new Comus record, my friend.
Yeah, and I'm itching to come to the States and play.
Roger Wooten from Comus, thank you so much.
All right, cheers.
Yes, the music of Comus isn't for everyone, but if you are interested, they have a website. It's comusmusic.co.uk, and their only two albums are still in print from a double CD compilation from Sanctuary Records called Song to Comus. That compilation was released in 2005. This has been the Alley Cast for October 2009. I'm Chris Boros. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to check out our exclusive interviews with Matty Pryor and Peter Knight of Steel Eye Span, and our Live from Folk Alley concert with the Acoustic Hot Tuna featuring Jorma Kaukonen and Jack Cassidy, plus all of the great open mic artists, and of course the Halloween Scream Stream. 5.5 hours of Halloween-themed folk music is available for you right now. This has been the Alley Cast from FolkAlley.com. Happy Halloween.